thanks for tuning in to On the Same Page, a new podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library to keep you in the loop and on the same page about what's happening at your library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. We're halfway through the month of May.
We just finished our second annual How To Festival.
Yes, it was held at the Central Library on Saturday, May 5th.
It was very successful. We had good weather. Thank you, Rain, for staying away.
Yes, and a pretty good turnout. So for today's episode, we're going to talk to a few of the presenters at the How To Festival, so you can hear from them if you weren't able to come to their sessions or come to the festival yourself in person.
And we are providing the link to all of the presenters that appeared.
Yes.
We had them on our blog, so you can check them out and see what you missed.
Yes, we'll also include a link to that blog post that lists every single one of our presenters and ways to kind of see what they do.
But first, we are going to briefly talk about what we're reading.
Yes.
All right, Erica, what did you read? I read a lot of stuff. Okay, so most recently
I read the graphic novel Bolivar, and I picked it up because one of my Goodreads friends gave it 5 stars, and I was like, well, I've never heard of this, and also, that sounds great.
That's impressive. You don't usually read graphic novels.
It's really good, though. She was right. It's about the last living dinosaur.
Excellent.
And his next-door neighbor, who is a little girl, convinced that there's a dinosaur, and no one believes her. They just think she's got an overactive imagination. And it's really wonderfully illustrated, because she keeps getting glimpses of him, so it's kind of like Where's Waldo? You have to like find the dinosaur in this illustration, because he's usually out of frame or hidden behind something. And there's also this running theme of like, well, yeah, no one in New York City notices the dinosaur because they're so busy living their lives. That it kind of reminds you to not be too busy to notice something as cool as a dinosaur in your city.
That's beautiful. I love that idea.
Which is why I checked it out to you.
Yes, I did find it on my desk this morning.
But since it is aimed for younger readers, perhaps struggling to read or who really like the comic book feel, it doesn't take very long. I mean, it is like an inch thick, but it's just a couple blurbs. Just a couple blurbs on each page.
So it's not text heavy.
It's not text heavy, and it took me well under 20 minutes to finish.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
But you can take much longer, I'm sure, enjoying all that.
Oh, yeah, and you should. I was just like, I'm going to read this book real quick before work. And then I was not late for work, but I did lose track of time. It was so engrossing.
All right. Strong recommendation.
I also read Jason Reynolds' new book, Sunny. It's part of his Tracks series. Yeah. There's 3 books now, Ghost and Patina. Are the 2 previous ones. This one is about a young teen. I guess he's young to middle. He's a champion miler. He can run a mile in his sleep. He doesn't even have to try. He's so good. He can jog it out and still crush everybody. And he hates it. He doesn't want to do it anymore. And the only reason he's doing it is because his dad's like, well, your mom would have wanted you to. And he lost his mom at birth. And so he's carrying around feelings of guilt and not really understanding his mom or his dad because it's such a strained relationship due to the loss. And, you know, he's actually homeschooled, so he doesn't have a school relationship with any of his friends. Track is the only thing that keeps him going. So, like, he doesn't want to run anymore, but he wants to stay on the team. And it's kind of finding a new place on the team and building a new relationship with his father. And it's really good. I love all of Reynolds' work.
Yes. So. And this series is really good, too. So you will have already met this character from the earlier books.
Mm-hmm.
So they're named for kids who are on the team. So they circle through each other's stories, but you don't really get to know the other characters until he writes their own story.
Yeah.
So I hope that he's going to continue with it, too.
So the thing about this one, and I didn't listen to it, but I think it would be a very interesting listen, is he doesn't mention having ADD or anything like it, but he obviously has a very hyperactive mind, and it focuses on sounds, mm-hmm. and everything makes a sound, and it's written into the text that way. And so he, you know, Track makes a sound, but the mile doesn't make a sound he likes. It's boring. And he wants this type of sound, and they have to find an activity that makes that type of sound, and people make sounds. And
cool.
Yeah, so he ends up wanting to find something in track that is like dancing because he likes dance, and his homeschool teacher has introduced him to a variety of dance. And so, yeah, it was very, very unique, and I'm always thrilled with everything Reynolds does.
Oh, he's so great. We also both just read his For Everyone.
His kind of, not graduation speech, but not a graduation
right,
speech.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. He's
written a kind of a letter to a young artist.
Somewhere between like a letter and a poem.
Right. It's in verse.
Yes.
And it's about how the struggle is worth the art.
Yes.
And the creation is the prize. It's not the success and the right. fame and any of the accolades or money. It's about sticking to your path.
It's very inspiring.
Yeah, no, I loved it.
It's a great like pump up for anyone who has like creative aspirations, I think.
I just have
or aspirations for anything, I guess.
Yeah, so he's writing it as a writer, and he's talking about writing and art in that creative sense, but mm-hmm. your creation doesn't have to be painting or writing. It can be whatever you feel called to do, and as long as you are staying true to that calling is what he's encouraging. Even when there's naysayers and you have to move back in with your mom in your mid-20s and you haven't made a cent, but you just feel called to do this thing. And it sounds like that's the path he followed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, oh man, I love what he's doing for teens.
He's great.
All right, what have you read?
I've read a few different things. I'll start with teen book so that we keep the theme of young people before I go into my,
okay,
you know, required adult dystopian.
Why are you gonna bring us down?
So I read All Out, the No Longer Secret Stories of Queer Teens Throughout the Ages, and this was a collection of short stories by a variety of authors who identify as queer or in terms of sexual orientation or gender identity. And so the stories are kind of all over the map, but they center teens who either identify as queer or as, you know, gender non-conforming, non-binary, or trans. So they cover a lot of different identities and experiences. What was nice is most of the struggle doesn't the stories doesn't revolve around that identity.
Which is great.
Yes, because a lot of times that's what you see.
That's the story.
Right.
Their otherness.
And it's very, it very much impacts the story in every story that is, I mean, that's
because
it's
their life,
right.
Yeah.
But it's really great. There are historical fiction stories. There are fantasy. There are like rewritten folk tales. So it's something for everyone. But yeah, and I'm not a big short story reader, but I liked this because they were just long enough.
Did you dip in and out?
No, I did read them all, and I read them like straight through, but I took breaks because they're all written by different authors. Just like every story is by someone else. So that was really neat.
Is that NYA?
It is in YA, so that's for young adults. And something that, and I think both the short story kind of medium, mm-hmm. and the YA audience means that these have like high emotional drama and are packed into a very short space, which is.
And YA is known for kind of like roping you in very quickly.
Yes, and they all do that very well. So it's good, I enjoyed it. So my mandatory adult dystopian story that I read, you know, you gotta satisfy what you really want to be reading. I read When She Woke by Hillary Jordan.
Yeah, this sounded really interesting.
Yeah, so it came out in 2011. It's mostly like a retelling of The Scarlet Letter. Mostly, sort of.
Would you call The Scarlet Letter a dystopia?
I mean, it's just a repressive, religious,
yeah,
like theocratic society.
Right.
I don't think I would call it dystopia because they aren't, like, they don't have as much power as you would, and like, it's not a true like totalitarian kind of system of governance. I mean, I'm gonna die on this.
No, we had this discussion.
Yes. So anyway, When She Woke, it's sort of. The Scarlet Letter meets The Handmaid's Tale. So it's set in, I'm trying to think how near future, very near future, where in some states reproductive rights have been rolled back completely. And in addition, there's a growing presence of like Christian, very kind of like fundamental conservative Christian ideology in government. There is a secretary of religion, I believe, or spirituality, something like that. And the method for identifying people who have been convicted of felonies or missed any sort of crime is called chroming. They inject a virus into you, which colors your skin, your eyes, your mouth, your tongue. So I think violent felons are red. There's something for like nonviolent felons, then certain kinds of misdemeanors, things like that. So there are all these different colors.
And she's a violent felon.
Yes. So it starts with her waking up red.
Does she know why?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do we learn why?
Yes. So she's in prison, which also is fully televised.
Oh, that reminds me of the Panopticon.
Yes. So it's got this like kind of very classic. You see that a lot in dystopian. So Hannah, not Hester, Hannah is the main character. So she wakes up, she's red, she's in jail, prison I should say, and she knows she's got like a 15-year sentence of being red, so having this virus repeatedly re-upped. And she's wrestling with her past very strong religious convictions and the actions that she's taken that have caused her to be someone who is now a crone and to have this criminal record. Anyway,
I really like the idea of that mark.
Yes. So you're very visible.
So do you even have to be in prison?
Usually they're, I think...
Like if you're marked, can't they just let you out and then everyone would know?
Well, so it's sort of like a very visible probation, I think.
That's very much a retelling.
Yes. It was interesting. It's just the internal struggle of her trying to rectify her actions and her beliefs and her, you know, the way that her beliefs change over time.
Yeah. I think that's a common struggle. Yeah.
It was well done, though. Do you have another one?
I can talk about Kwame Alexander's latest. So one of the books I read, I started and finished in Poetry Month, but not before we had to talk about poems or the poetry collections we were reading. Was Kwame Alexander's latest novel in verse, Rebound. It's actually not YA. It's in the older J. Mm-hmm. Well, it's in J, but it's aimed for... Anywho. So it's aimed at a slightly younger than YA audience. These are young teens.
It's like 11, 12.
Mm-hmm. I think he might be 13 or 14. So this is a kid who recently, in the last 3-4 months, lost his father suddenly, and he's having trouble dealing with it. He's having trouble acting normal. He's having trouble watching everyone else act like it never happened, feeling like he can't publicly process his emotions, which is sort of posturing and sort of just, no one has said it's okay. No one has encouraged that. He does have two friends that are very supportive. He happens to have panic attacks every time he hears sirens now, so living in a city is kind of hard on him. He might be on his way home from school and an ambulance goes by and then he wakes up on the sidewalk. And so he's really, really struggling, and his mom's having trouble dealing with this, you know, suddenly moody teen. She feels like she's lost her husband and also her son at the same time, and so she sends him to his grandparents' house for the summer. And so it's this really good story about learning to find the way forward after loss, and you know, he realizes that some of the activities he used to do with his dad he can do now because he likes them. He doesn't have to avoid them because he did them with his dad, and he meets new relatives and kind of, you know, again, finding your way forward is sometimes learning which friends are good friends and which friends are growing apart from you. And it's just a really, really good story. In the end, if you've read the crossover, there's kind of like a fast forward to the end of that story or the beginning of that story, which is very heart-wrenching. But yeah, just a really, another solid story from Alexander. His work's so great.
Yes. Great.
Do you want to talk about another one? You can talk about when?
We both read When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing by Daniel Pink, and this is one that Lynn Hill recommended.
When we talked to her, yeah. Yes. I know, I've had it on hold ever since, isn't that crazy?
I think we both put it on hold that day.
10 months!
It's really good, so it just talks about the timing of things and divides people into, you know, morning people or night people, or what most people are, is just kind of middle of the road, late morning.
And he people. Really encourages you to pay attention, kind of keep a journal almost of what you do and when you feel good doing things, and find those sweet spots of your day when you need to do your best work, and so you can rearrange your schedule. So maybe you don't need to be in a meeting when it's actually most productive time if you can arrange it that way.
Unless your meeting is like trying to get buy-in for something that you're working on, then you definitely want to be in when you're in your
own.
One of the other things that was great is he talks about how just taking a short break, even like 5 minutes, go outside, look at, don't look at the sun, but like walk around
the sun. Outside is very important. He talks about sad desk lunches, which we are definitely guilty of doing sometimes.
Don't eat the sad desk lunch or it ruins your productivity for after your sad desk lunch. Go outside, walk around. When you come back, it's almost like you just woke up and have your smart brain again, if you're a morning person.
Right.
But breaks help everybody, no matter what kind of time of day person they are.
Abby has learned a new trick, which doesn't apply to me because I don't drink caffeine.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, everybody that I work with. But apparently, if you wait an hour and a half to 2 hours after you wake up to have your coffee, it has a lot more effect. Because when you first wake up, you get like this cortisol jolt. And so pouring coffee on top of that does nothing. I mean, you know, like...
Maybe, I mean, you'll feel the same way because your hormones are doing it and the coffee's not really having an effect.
So if you wait until that initial kind of wake-up bump...
which usually takes about 2 hours.
...wears off and then have your coffee, it's like waking up all over again, but in a not-so-painful way.
We have mentioned this to a few moms and they scoffed at this idea. So parents, have your coffee whenever it works best.
If you're just not getting enough sleep, then you are probably going to need as much help as...
Yeah, caffeine is your friend sometimes.
Yes.
What else did we learn? So this is so great that Abby read this book at the same time I read this book, because I had to resist talking to her about it, and it was hard, but she did get to it very quickly. Usually these are the books I'm reading, and I'm texting her everything about.
Oh, we also learned that in your ninth year of any decade...
Yeah, just before you turn a new decade, so 30 or 40...
You are... Well... It's both rates of like suicide spike, but also rates of doing ridiculous things that you never thought you would do before spike.
Like so, marathons.
Yes. So 29 is the most common age for a first marathon.
Yeah, that was very. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. No, it makes a lot of sense because people were like, I have to get something done in my 20s.
It wasn't just
this is an insane.
And
thing.
It wasn't just decades. Like people are more productive, you know, in the final minutes of an hour or hours of a day or you know that end point. That's why making kind of New Year's resolutions.
But at the, on the same point, like anything you can use as a marker to start fresh is also a time when you can, when people do more or are meeting goals more. So New Year's resolutions, a birthday.
Anniversary,
right. The first day of the week, the first day of the month, all of those things.
Yeah, it was just very, very interesting.
I wasn't expecting this to be a self-help book, but that's how I'm treating it.
No, it really isn't. It's more of a social psychology book.
Well, and every chapter follows with, like, what is it, like a brain hacker's toolkit or something. So it's like, here's what you do to maximize your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
It does help. Like, I've certainly, he talks about the mid-afternoon lulls a lot. And everyone gets those, so...
Yes. Even if you're a night person, you're going to get that before you become your most...
Even if you have lunch caffeine, like, you're still going to get that.
Yes.
And going outside for the brief walk, which I've tried a couple days, does help.
Mm-hmm.
He also talks about the caffeine nap.
Oh, yeah. Other coffee drinkers might be familiar with this trick. Drink coffee right before you go to sleep.
Sleep for no longer than 20 minutes.
But if you drink coffee, you're probably going to have to wake up in 20 minutes anyway.
Because that's how long it takes to take effect. But anyway, you wake up after 20 minutes and you're wide awake because your coffee's taken effect and also you've rested a little bit. Now, I'm no good at the short nap. God, we should be
if
doing...
If you are an accomplished napper, this is the nap for you.
Yes, we can recommend this to nappers of all types. You are not a napper, we sympathize.
I don't think that we ruined the entire book for you, so this you're still going to get something out of it.
Yeah, these are the highlights. And we are both larks, so owls, you might get something totally different out of this book. Most people are somewhere in between.
Yes.
Next, we're going to hear from some presenters from our second annual How To Festival, which took place at the Central Library on Saturday, May 5th. Joining us now is Christina of the Radiant Leaf to talk about the How To Festival that took place on Saturday, May 5th at the Central Library. So welcome, Christina. We're happy to have you. So you were a repeat presenter at this year's How To Fest. You participated last year. And what made you want to take part in that?
Well, I really like the overall feeling of How To Fest. It's really nice for people to show up excited to learn something new. And the collaborative atmosphere between the presenters is really wonderful. People helping each other set up, and they're all excited to cross little circles and make local connections.
And while you were at last year's festival, did you go to any of the other sessions?
Yes, I really liked the active bystander training from Sarah. Also, I did some coffee tasting.
Oh, yeah.
And so what about that experience made you want to come back this year?
I think the most fun moment was during my How to Set Up a Tent presentation last year. I had a woman tell me that she was inspired to take her first camping trip at the age of 65. Because if I could do it, she could do it.
That's so great.
I haven't heard that story before.
Yeah, feeling like you actually inspired someone is pretty great.
Yeah.
So I'm back.
That's great.
And this year, can you talk about what you presented on?
Yes. I did a Chinese tea ceremony and also a how to make sun tea.
Very cool. And why is tea, I guess, so important to you and that it makes you want to share it with others?
Sure. So the tea ceremony, if you practice it by yourself, it gives you a time for reflection. But when you're in a group, you get this really lovely natural conversation. And often you get into topics that are more meaningful rather than sort of nervous small talk. And I think that it gives everyone a reason to be there, the tea, and something to do with their hands, so there's no pressure. And then the sun tea, I mean, in the summer is the best use for fresh herbs, and anything I can make without turning on appliances in the kitchen is ideal.
Yeah, it would keep the cool.
Yes.
I was saying to Abby, I also know how to make sun tea.
She puts a bag in water and sets it outside.
Which works. Also totally works.
But yours is much more involved and thoughtful.
Well, it's easy if you have the herbs. Or if you, like me, like to go to the farmer's market and shop for herbs.
Do you have a favorite recipe?
I usually start with whatever I have fresh, so I've been growing lemon balm, and it kind of gets out of control here in the summer, so I have lots of it. And I like that with either raspberry leaf, or it's kind of nice because it brightens up everything, so mm-hmm. something like nettles go well with that.
How do you pick nettles?
Well, you can pick them barehanded and just put up with the stings. It's supposed to be kind of like an arthritis treatment.
Interesting.
Or you can wear gloves. Or you can buy dried nettles in the bulk section at like natural food stores.
Okay. Lots of options to get your nettle fix. Were there any other how-to sessions that you were excited about?
Well, I love to cook and camp, so the knife sharpening demo is pretty exciting. Also, I love the visual of the Arabic calligraphy, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that I'm really skilled enough for that.
Excellent.
Okay, so is there somewhere online people can go find you and your tea offerings?
Sure. I post on Instagram as @theradiantleaf, and my website is theradiantleaf.wordpress.com.
Excellent. And we'll link to both of those in our show notes.
Yes.
Cool.
And finally, as a change of pace from these other questions, but something that we like to ask all of our guests, what are you reading right now?
So last night I finished The Same Different, which is a book of poetry by Hannah Sungi Park. And she uses really great wordplay, kind of splitting one word into two words, and but without being corny. And then I'm listening to My Southern Journey by Rick Bragg. His voice reading his own book is just wonderful.
Awesome.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, thank you for being with us today. And thank you again for participating in the How-To Festival.
Yes. Both times.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
All right. We are now talking with Miranda, who presented at the How-To Festival. Can you tell us, Miranda, what made you want to be part of the How-To Festival this year?
When I was first approached with presenting something, I just thought it sounded just like a fun time, getting a bunch of people together and sharing different skills with the community. And, of course, the library, it is a great venue to share those skills with the community at large.
Awesome. And what did you present on?
So I taught people how to cross-stitch.
Excellent.
And why did you choose that subject?
Well, most people who know me know that, I guess what you could call a fiber artist. It's the fancy way of saying I'm a seamstress. besides making many of my own clothes, I'm also a historical costumer. And I have the alter ego of Elizabeth Monroe, our fifth first lady. And so embroidery and cross-stitch goes right into that, what I already have an interest in. Back in March, I also presented at Northside of the program, presented it as Elizabeth Monroe, called The Era of Good Stitching. And it was a riff of the nickname of Monroe's presidency, The Era of Good Feelings. And so part of the program, what I wanted to do was present this cross-stitch art form and really bring Mrs. Monroe and her daughters kind of out of the shadows and out from under the wings of always being discussed along with the men, and kind of show the activities that they would have been involved with, what they did when they were young, so embroidery and cross-stitching. And even though I didn't present at the How To Fest as Elizabeth Monroe, for me it was still important to share that skill, to show it off, a skill that's been around for centuries, and to encourage those who were at the table with me to use it for their own artistic expression.
That's great.
I know we talked about this a little bit earlier. Do you typically have diverse turnouts for cross-stitch programs?
It depends on how you classify diverse. When I did the program at Northside, I had a diversity of ages. I had, I would say, preteens and teenagers, all the way up to elderly members of the community. Did have one gentleman at the program. And then Saturday's program was rather surprised. The two participants there at the table with me, they were on the younger end, preteen, early teenager, and one was male. So on one hand, I was not surprised at all to see the young man sit down and kind of want to know what's going on. And he shared with me, too, that he knew how to sew a straight stitch. It was very encouraging to me to see him embrace it. One of the things I did was pass around the cloth with the needle and thread and had the two young people do some of the stitches. And to see him just fully embrace that, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I know for me, I always kind of associate that with an older mm-hmm. audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which may just be us not being taught it as much.
Right.
Do you have any good online resources for finding cross-stitch instructions or patterns?
Oh, the library is filled with them. You can just look in the catalog and just search cross-stitch as the keyword, and you're going to find so many resources, and current resources, too. One of the books out there at the information desk right now, brand new publication, is on embroidery. And really showing it off, kind of how to use embroidery in your modern life and modern decorating.
I know, I remember a book coming in maybe a year ago, and it was, I think, something like Not Your Grandmother's Cross Stitch, and it's like the one full of profanity and less than polite gestures.
And of course, you can go on Pinterest, too, and get all sorts of inspiring ideas for subversive cross stitch.
Excellent.
Okay, so to switch gears a little bit, can you tell us what you are reading right now or have read recently that you'd like to recommend?
Okay. I tend to be a multitasking reader, so I usually have a good 3 books going on at one time, and kind of depending upon my mood, I'll go back and forth between them. One that I just started, brand new publication that came out, called Things That Make White People Uncomfortable by Michael Bennett. When I don't want to think too much, I'm also about a few hundred pages in to the fifth book in the Outlander series. And then for my own independent research, kind of a heavy hitter, really makes you examine history a bit more. It's called The Half Has Never Been Told by Edward Baptist, and it's all about the domestic slave trade.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So those are the heavy topics that I'm reading.
I think that's all that we had for you,
yeah.
Unless there's anything else that you want to add.
I think that's it for the moment.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for finding time to call in and chat with us.
Yes, thank you for asking me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thanks again for joining in on the How To Festival.
So now we're joined by Brittany.
Hello there.
Thanks for stopping by to chat with us.
It's my pleasure.
We're glad to have you back. Okay. What made you want to take part in the How To Festival this year?
Well, I was happy to be asked to be a presenter by Sarah, but she knows that I volunteer at the SPCA, and I had done a lightning talk at our in-service day concerning volunteering. I do two different types of volunteering. I do community theater volunteering, and then I also do SPCA volunteering. So I tailored this specific presentation to just the SPCA volunteering. We talked about fostering. I've fostered two adopted two cats myself. And so I know the whole process with that. And if I have more room, I will be happy to actually foster more animals. But right now we're kind of tapped out at three cats.
Yeah. And the SPCA kind of needs more fosters right now. Because they're
kitten season is coming. So if you have room at all, feel free to contact the SPCA and say, hey, hi, I can help foster. Rebecca Blackburn is actually the person who takes care of coordinating the fostering. And that happens to be where a lot of our kittens are right now. People have been coming in recently and going, where are the kittens? And a lot of them are in foster. A lot of them are really tiny. I have a friend named Sarah who is bottle feeding two babies right now.
Wow.
And I get to see the Facebook feed of like the cuteness.
So cute.
It's ridiculously cute. And everybody's threshold for adopting and fostering, It depends on the individual, depends on your situation, what you can handle. Like for me, and Sarah's the same way, we couldn't foster adopt, not foster to adopt adult cats. You could only do that with kids because you could send the kittens back because you know they're going to get homes.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really hard to do with an adult cat for both of us. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
That would be my threshold. That, and if you're bringing in animals into an environment that are, there are already animals,
mm-hmm.
it's much easier to do with babies.
Mm-hmm. And they haven't developed any aversions.
Yeah. Well, they're so cute and helpless that, like, the adult animals are just like, okay, they're babies.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hurt them. And, you know, that they're also easier to corral at that point.
Right.
Like, you can get a kittening pen and keep your fosters in there
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, and that's a little easier.
Do you think you turned any people into foster parents?
I had quite a few questions. I had six people at my session, and that was pretty good since it was 10 o'clock. I was like, oh,
first time.
I was worried. Yeah. I had one little girl there with, like, a notebook, and she was taking notes, and it was really cute. And I do hope they go and decide to foster. And she had questions about being a volunteer herself, just in general, so I was also able to give her that information.
Did they take child volunteers?
She's at the threshold. They do, teen volunteers, and she's 13, so I told her, I said, I'm not sure what the age is exactly, but you can check, the website and see what the options are. They're always looking for volunteers, and their critter camp is coming up for the summer, so that's also, a good way to get them in young, and it's a lot of fun. Our teen volunteers are very helpful, too, I will say.
I bet.
They have specific roles that they play. They don't necessarily do everything that us adult volunteers do in terms of cat wrangling, because we literally, we're putting them all back
right
at night.
Yeah.
So I do closing shifts most of the time, and I've gotten really good at doing the scoop.
Catch them off guard.
Get the blanket. I just kind of wrap them in the tortilla and put them in the cage. Because they understand. They don't necessarily want to go back at the end of the night.
Yeah.
But, we don't want the team volunteers to do stuff like that, but they help us with the plane, and that's the fun part.
Right.
And, making sure things are clean and stuff like that at the end of the night. So they're extremely helpful. But, yes, so we talked about the fostering, talked about the general joys and pitfalls of volunteering in general.
Yeah.
With the SPCA and fostering, which...
Right, because it's fun to hang out with the animals, but they do go to homes and
yeah,
miss them.
You have to be happy for them, but, like, right, at the same time.
Yeah, for yourself.
Yeah. Well, my philosophy on it is, because everyone I've talked to, they're like, okay, we know you're a crazy cat lady, so, like, how do you deal with that aspect of things? And I go, well, I root for my favorites. You kind of adopt favorites in your head. And it's not like you can take them all home.
So if you just want a good life for them.
You want a good life for them, and you kind of just advocate for all of the cats, obviously, but if you know one is a specific match for that person or that family, you can kind of play matchmaker, which is cool. One of your favorites, and that's a good day when you hear that they got adopted.
Yeah.
And you also hope that they don't get returned.
Right. Do you ever hear back from people about how great their
choice
was?
Pictures. We have bulletin board. We get pictures, and usually they look completely different and so happy. And it makes you happy. With the babies, like I said, you know, if I was to just foster out in general, it would have to be kittens, because I would probably want to keep the adults. My husband also knows this. He's very tolerant. Well, he often comes and he helps me with the kitties,
that's
too.
It's good that you know that about yourself, though.
I do.
Don't end up with
very well
adding aware. Cats.
Once
very
you
well
have aware. Their personalities and you really get to know them in that way, that, you know.
Well, I got into volunteering with the SPCA in general because I had a cat that passed away. And his sister was going bonkers by herself. She could not function by herself. And so Robert and I ventured to the SPCA. We're like, oh my God, because we came from an area that had a kill shelter. And the SPCA, thank the Lord, is not a kill shelter. I could not volunteer at one of those.
Right.
So we went in. We didn't know what to expect. But as you've seen, because you've been there, it's a very cozy, fun environment. You know, cats can come out and they can play.
Mm-hmm.
And we were immediately put at ease. And, you know, we fell in love with Peter the Pirate. If you see my presentation before, you've seen a picture of Peter with his little one eye. He came from a hoarding situation. But we knew he would be able to get along with the other cat.
Right.
And at first, she didn't know quite what he was. Because he had the one eye, and he was walking funny. Because he had never been outside of a cage.
Yeah.
In his life, really.
Yeah.
It was obvious from how he was walking. He didn't know what to do with this space. I think he ran around for like an hour and a half before he settled down. But my poor husband was like, what is he doing?
It's
like he's just getting out. And but they settled into a rhythm with each other. And he passed away from a heart condition from the stress of the hoarding. So if you're fostering to adopt, be aware sometimes they do have health issues from their previous situations. And that could be with any straight up adoption too. But so he passed away after 9 months. And she was still going bonkers by herself. So then we went, and people knew us at this point. Like, you come in. We found ourselves coming in at least once a week just to play with the kitties anyway. So I was like, all right. You know, the volunteers there were amazing, and they helped match us with Ryder, who is this big, gray, goofy ball of sweetness. And he looks like a potato, but I love him to death. And he is a formerly feral cat, which Violet is too. And you can tell that when they have their ear clipped. That means that they were trapped in a cat colony or they were astray. And whenever you see that at the shelter, that's what that means, is that they were trapped and neutered and then released, and then some of them were brought back if they could be socialized. Ryder was so scared that he had to be sedated when they brought him in for his first exam. Because he just hadn't been socialized.
Yeah.
So they did a wonderful job of it, though, because he's great.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any issues. I mean, to the point where my vet was like, because she read all of his records when we first did the vet check. If you adopt the SPCA, by the way, you get a free vet check, free physical for your animal, any of the participating cat or dog vets around. So it's pretty great.
Yeah.
But she looked at the record. She was like, have you had any, like, aggression issues with him? I'm like, no. I said, why? Because I hadn't looked. She goes, because they had to sedate him when it came in. I said, that's crazy. But he had been returned because the previous people had adopted him and they had children. And they probably did not ease him in properly to the home. When you adopt, you have to do a safe room. You gotta have a room apart from everything else where they can kind of ease into things, hear the noises. If you have children, hear children noises, hear the screaming or whatever's going on. And that's also something to say in the presentation. All the stuff I'm saying now is what we talked about. And, you know, people were surprised about, like, the safe room aspect of things. But because it used to be you could just plop them down in the middle of the floor. And one person asked about that. And I said,
I remember looking for cats probably about 10 years ago. And at the time, I was like, I had heard that two was better than one. And I was like, I'll take two. Yeah. And like, we don't like to do that. And I was like, nah, I'll take one then. But that's a little bit more common now, I feel. Where there's like a partner animal.
Yeah. I mean, you get a lot of bonded pairs. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of bonded pairs right now. And that was what Violet and Simon were when we adopted them. They were brother and sister. They were formerly feral as well. And they had been outside for about 4 months before they were caught. And their foster parents did not socialize them properly. The dad was allergic, so they stayed in the basement when they were kids. So they came to us, and they were on a trial period for about a month, so we could see how they were. And it was kind of a hot mess at first. Because they didn't understand what a home meant.
Right.
You know, they marked territory, they knocked things over. Like, and my husband had never had, like, pets before, so he's like, what is this? I'm like, it's okay, it'll even out. But that's one thing you need to make sure if you are fostering, you socialize them properly when they're kittens. And that's part of the reason why we're so big on fostering kittens.
To get them used to people.
Because that is one of the most important aspects of them getting adopted in general. And that's also something I said in the presentation. Because we talked about that. Well, what about the shy cats? They stay there a little longer a lot of the time.
Because they warm up and reach out and try to play with people.
Yeah, and that tends to be what sells them, so to speak.
So we'll include the link to the SPCA's website and all the volunteer information on the show notes.
Yes. Thank you.
And then before we let you go, we do have our favorite question, of course, which is, what are you reading right now?
I'm trying to think. I'm reading like 3 books right now. I'm trying to think about the one that's sticking in my head the most, because they're all fluffy romances. Regency.
It's a good time of year for them.
Yes. Spring. I actually gave somebody reader's recommendation on fluffy romances the other day.
Perfect.
Sarah Ballo. It's called Only a Promise. And it's in a series I haven't read before, but it's a very well-written one. And it has to do with people that have survived the Napoleonic Wars, and then they came back, and so they have, like, PTSD and how they dealt with that.
Yeah, way back.
But with romance in there, so it's a little bit of substance.
Yeah, that's always nice. I appreciate that in romance novels. It's not just that. There's more to it.
There's more.
Yeah.
It gets you a little bit more invested in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you so much. That's all that we have for today, unless you have anything else that you want to add in.
No.
All right. And thank you again for participating in How To.
Yeah.
So we hope you enjoyed learning a little bit more about the How To Festival and the presenters that graciously shared their experience with us.
That's all from us today. As always, a big thank you to the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to join the Friends or find out more about them, you can do so at jmrlfriends.org.
And supporting the Friends supports all the programs that happen at your library, so please consider it.
Including things like the How To Festival.
And this podcast.
Yes.
We'll be back in 2 weeks at the beginning of June to talk about summer reading.
Yes. Very exciting.
Yes. And summer in general. We're just very excited for it.
But in the meantime, be sure to hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast.
And please consider reviewing us if you like what we're doing here.
Yes. It helps us reach more people. Once again, thanks for tuning in. And we're glad to be
on the same page.